Today on The Grave Talks, Brush with the Devil, a conversation with James and Ito. After suffering through a traumatic childhood, James and Ito found himself searching for answers. Answers as to why his life started the way it did. Why would the world or God deal him such a negative hand? This quest for answers would begin his journey into a better understanding of his relationship with spirituality and life. Along this journey, he would begin to realize that sometimes the dead and the never living have a deeper impact on our lives than many may accept. This is the story of James' initial search for answers for himself, and eventually seeking answers and clarity for those affected by demons.
Well, you know, I had a lot of different experiences than most people when it comes to their stories within the paranormal, especially dealing with ghost or a haunting, growing up and being confused or scared. Basically, I never grew up with any of that. I basically grew up in a situation. I was a child and I was put in a situation by family, and it took a toll on me for a long time. And it really, you know, I don't really like to talk about my faith too much. You know, I am Catholic clergy, but so that just shows people my faith in some fashion. But I really, at that point, even as a child, once I could start understanding the concept of God, wondered why God would do this to me as a child. Why would he put me through these trials and tribulations so young? Why didn't my parents want me? And these questions came through my head. And so really, initially, what got me into the paranormal was the search and answer for God. Did he exist, or does God exist? If he does, why do certain things happen? So it really led me down a path of, even at a young age, once I could start reading a book, could pick up books about Darwinism and evolutionism and, you know, quantum theory, and watching Unsolved Mysteries, and watching these shows that associated with the paranormal, scariest places on earth. So many literature and so many entertainment and based movies or television that really engraved me. And basically, you know, my search for God really kind of led me down to the path that, you know, we always hear about heaven and hell and sometimes purgatory, but it led me to kind of look at it if I could maybe figure out what ghosts and spirits are, because, you know, talk about ghosts and spirits in some capacity, or deities, have been around since human civilization was born. And so I thought maybe if I could start investigating, of course, as a hobby at first, that I could come up with a closer answer of what God is, because maybe if I could figure out what's then, of course, you know, I'm young and don't know any better of how complex this world is. But I thought if I could figure out what spirits or ghosts are, it could give me a better answer to figure out what God is. So with me getting involved in the field, and I'm, you know, I live in Rhode Island. I've lived in Rhode Island most of my life. And, you know, a show called Ghost Hunters came out. And I thought it was cool that the small state with the largest name was on television with these guys trying to investigate or prove the paranormal or debunk it. And that also interested me. I was very young, you know, it's been like 20 years, I believe, since that show's come out, maybe a little less, but, you know, that was also a big impact. So really is what led me down the path was the initial things that happened to me as a child. Mm-hmm. And of course, non-paranormal at all.
Sure.
So it's interesting how, you know, it started me on this journey, but in many ways it was very much needed, because I was able to forgive and forget a lot of my past, if not most of my past, if not all of it at all. And, you know, it really did make my faith in a higher power stronger beyond what I think most people's faith is capable of. But it's been a ride, and you know, there's been many ups and downs. But you know, I'm glad that that seeking of that answer, even though I've still not answered that question as a child, I still believe it was a path that I was supposed to go down to. And I think with what I deal with now, specifically in the paranormal or the preternatural aspects of things, it really was meant to be. Mm-hmm. It really put me through a lot of tests early for things that I've come across.
It's interesting because the more you talk about this, the more you investigate or one does any of these things, you begin thinking, oh, I'm going to get some answers. I'm going to get some more definitive direction as to what these things are. And I think you would probably agree, as anyone I've ever talked to in this field would say, you end up with more questions than answers at the end of the day. You're more informed than you were at point one, but you have more potential paths for all of these things to go down in terms of what these things are, the very generic term being ghosts. We don't get very religious on the show, but I'm very interested about when you began this journey going down, exploring religion, exploring your faith, exploring the paranormal, and all these things kind of simultaneously. Because depending on who you talk to, really, and what someone's belief system is, with whatever version of the church they are a part of, you could run into people saying there's no such thing as ghosts, or they're all demons, or there's angels and demons, or there's nothing at all. And for the two to coexist, at least for me as a child, I grew up Lutheran for the most part, but I would always hear... my dad was Catholic. My mom was Lutheran. I would hear so much back and forth of this exists, this doesn't exist, and either it's accepted or it's not accepted. But there was very little in the world of things coexisting, of the supernatural world, of the ghost world being something that is tangible. We should even be talking about, or people are just, they're crazy. They don't know what they're talking about. That doesn't exist. But it sounds like you found a way in what you've studied and what you've learned in your beliefs that these two can certainly coexist, and they're very much intertwined.
Oh, definitely. You know, I think, you know, I'm no expert. You know, I do not know everything. I learn something new every day. I think one of my goals in life is to achieve, if not completion of a new task every day of my life. If it's something very minute, I want to complete it. And, you know, with information out there, and of course civilizations, and the so much literature that has come across human eyes, human fingertips, there's so much out there people can read and don't even know about. But the problem is too is with paranormal, because in fact it is a pseudoscience at this point in time. We're not a respected thing by the scientific community in many retrospects, even though scientists do get involved, and people like Thomas Edison, Nikola Tesla, the father of computers, Charles Babbage, they all have dabbled in the paranormal in some way. You know, the Ghost Club being very predominant of a lot of very smart people. But I think one of the things that I try to relate to and look at are things that have been documented by multiple different people, just like the scientific method in some aspect, but documented by the same people, the same characteristics, the same classifications. And I really truly look at that. There's many different theories out there, and I'm very open to every single one of them, because I don't know the answer. So maybe they do. Maybe listen to them, and you learn from everybody. But the one thing I can say about the science and theology aspect of it. You know, theology and science have been debating for a long time. To me, theology is a science, while science is a science as well. I think they can be both an entity and both coexist and be respectful to each other. But there's people that don't read these things and have a lot of misconceptions or misunderstand or are told things, but they don't seek out that answer for themselves. They are just told things, and they just never seek to read that literature that's out there and these viewpoints viewed by many different people throughout time. You know, deities and the concept of good and evil had been around for a very long time in civilization. Hinduism, one of the oldest modern day religions. The yin and the yang is a big thing. There's so much different civilizations and culture that talk about ghosts, spirits, but even higher power as well, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to dissimulate and say that these things don't exist, but there's so many similarities and commonalities between all those civilizations and beliefs that it's eye-opening, even though I'm Catholic and, you know, I follow Christianity, but I also don't disprove other people's beliefs or put them down. But people also misunderstand, you know, biblical scripture, especially if they're Christian. The spirit is brought up many times in the Bible, and I'm not a preachy person. I don't like to push my faith or religion on anybody. But there's things written within scripture that people follow in their religion that are written there, and people either misinterpret it or overread it and don't understand it. So that's where a lot of those misconceptions come into place, where ghosts and angelic or celestial beings can't exist at the same time. I get the mentality that God wouldn't allow people to wander the earth, because that is, I guess, a bad act, but only heaven and hell exist. But, these are things that have been debated for a very long time, mm-hmm. as long as theology has been around, as long as St. Thomas Aquinas, one of a very smart man, a smart philosopher, a lot of these people, even Hippocrates, the father of medicine, performed exorcisms on people as psychotherapy. So all these concepts have been used by very smart people. And, for people that can't meld the two, your brain is, it has a component that is faith-based. You know, faith is a big portion of one of our components of our brain. So all these things intertwine in a way, but people aren't just willing to want to learn, because sometimes when you feel so strongly such about something, and you figure out that it doesn't really meld that way, some people are just not willing to want to learn what's out there. And that, I see that as a problem, but of course I was like that too until I really opened my own eyes as well. And sometimes it takes time, sometimes it never happens, but the research and theories and all this literature and all these smart people that have come before us or even are still with us have put this information out there, and you just got to compile it and see what the common denominator is. A lot of people can say all ghosts are demons, but yeah, I've dealt with cases where there's different classifications, different characteristics. Something that I wouldn't call evil, because it was just trying to make communication. There's these things that you have to look at. There's these processes. And, some people just jump the gun and, like I said, don't want to look into the things that exist out in this world.
Sure.
And, it is a scary world. Of course, the paranormal, especially in the ghost aspect, of course, even Bigfoot to me is scary. You come across Bigfoot, he's throwing trunks at you and stuff. But, or you're getting abducted by aliens, which I believe all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm a paranormal investigator. That's what I started as. I like all those things, but all these things can intertwine. The more you open your mind, and the more you want to see, the more that you're going to learn. And the more you learn, knowledge is power.
Let me ask you this, because I think this is always very much an opinion-based question, but you have a lot of experience in this area. When someone comes up to you And we get these letters quite a bit, and this is really kind of the belief that I'm about to describe that I was taught growing up when I was interested in ghosts. It was very much there's heaven and there's hell, and anything that is ghostly is going to be a demon or an angel. And you had mentioned earlier about misinterpretation of scriptures and misinterpretation of messages. Someone who's answering that question of heaven and hell is basing that on their interpretation of a scriptural belief system that they were taught, or whatever it may be, that's where they're coming from by answering the question that way. How do you answer that question, though, when somebody comes to you and says, I'm pretty sure Aunt Sally is haunting the house. It's her perfume. I smell her baking on certain days. There's nothing malevolent going on whatsoever. It's all warm and cozy. And there's never been anything negative, and there never is anything negative. And they fully believe, and evidence points to, there's not a demon in your house. It's not an angel that's baking the cookies and has the perfume. It is likely Aunt Sally. But when the belief system is strictly angels and demons, and that's what their interpretation of scripture is, where does that misinterpretation come in, that people get so black or white, essentially, on that there's no gray area, there's no room, essentially, in a lot of Christianity to believe that Aunt Sally's still hanging out. She's not in heaven or hell yet. She's still in the kitchen.
Well, like I said, you know, there's literature out there, you know, that expands people's, but it's hard when you come across things like that. You know, I get that all the time. You know, I do a lot of conferences and speak at a lot of events. And of course, you know, I wear my clerics. I'm a deacon with the Catholic Church. I'm there as a representative of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I am there to hear people to consult, or to, you know, even say, you know, to sacramentals such as holy water and stuff like that. So, but I get those questions all the time. You're a clergy. Why are you with these people? Why are you at this conference? And some of these people are devout Catholic, and they question me. But then I roll it back and say, you are here. You're interested in this. So, so when you come across people that you figure out through your process, and the one thing I'll say is the best answer I can say what about a ghost is I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, Brian Kangle, who's a good friend of mine, says that all the time. The best thing you can say is I don't know.
Sure. So
I really don't know the full quantum entanglement.
No, and none of us do.
what a ghost is, you know, so to explain them to, this is Aunt Sally, it's sometimes a very hard task. Mm-hmm. But if you can get names and you get these documentations, you can have these personal experiences, and you can show these people that this is no demon. But in that same token, where I've always said, you don't know what you're dealing with, it's unknown. So you can get all these characteristics, because we got to remember, even though I'm not saying Aunt Sally is demonic, and I don't like to use that word, I think they're very highly rare. But in the same token, a demon could be a master manipulator like they are, and show all the characteristics of Aunt Sally.
Sure.
I leave, and it ramps up again. You know, so those possibilities are there. But if you've done so much in your process, and you've dealt with this family for a long period of time, and sometimes, you know, people just go and investigate in a day. It's not a proper investigation. That's not proper research. You should take your time and look at every intricate detail of that person's haunting.
Sure.
Try to distinguish what it really is. But if at the end of it, you'd never receive any of those tokens of evil. And to me, I truly believe if you're dealing with evil case, regardless if you believe you're clairvoyant, clairsentient, clairaudient, once you step on that property, you feel that shift in that atmosphere. You feel like you're getting punched in the soul plex. Every case that I've ever done, anybody that I've ever had with me, and I've only done a few true demonic cases in my time of doing this, I felt that feeling. And in a lot of those other cases I've done, I've never ever felt that level of intensity. So, you know, you can explain these things to these people. You can, you know, pass on, maybe if they really are a true devout Catholic or Christian, that doesn't understand what the scripture says, you can present these things, not to sway their opinion, but to show them that there's a possibility that you aren't dealing with a demon, because, you know, you don't want them to have that mentality, because especially people that are Christians and you're dealing with the demon, you feel like you did something wrong. You felt like you sinned. God doesn't love you anymore. People get in that mentality. So you really want them to escape that mentality as fast as possible. But it's very hard to really lay down the facts saying that is on Sally, because to be honest, there is no facts in this field. There's only very smart people that have dabbled in it and said that there's possibilities to it. And, you know, there's these classifications and these things can be presented. You know, this is what you're experiencing. This is what you would be experiencing most likely in the other situation. So you could present these things and hopefully they'd be able to listen and understand. But if they're not, sometimes you got to just wash your hands and just walk away, because I'm not in it to have some debate with somebody. You know, I'm not going to tell you this is what it is, because I don't know what it is. You know, I can say and even if I dealt with a demon, I wouldn't even tell a client unless in a really severe circumstance I had to, would say you're dealing with a demon. I think it's just bad juju once you bring that word up, and it's just not a healthy thing for the environment, especially the human psyche.
Sure.
So, but to deal with people, to over, you know, that goes back to the debate of theology and science, and you know, their people's beliefs over other people's beliefs, and so it's really hard. You know, I've dealt with it, and sometimes it's a really hard pill to swallow, because sometimes you just have to walk away, because sometimes you just can't mix with certain people because they're not willing to listen to things presented to them, because they're so used to their ways.
Sure, that's understandable. Take me on the journey of where you first started getting involved, or your first experience being involved with the paranormal. Prior to getting into demonology, just doing some research, doing some investigating into the paranormal, not necessarily the first case you went into unless something happened there, but really the first time you had an experience that you went, oh my gosh, yes, something just happened here that no one in this room can explain.
Well, my first interesting thing about the paranormal, I don't really talk about the story because, you know, after so many years and the photo can't be found, but my aunt and uncle, a long, long time ago, went on a vacation and stayed at this place, and they came back, they took a photo of the place because, you know, it was like some historic place, and, you know, in the picture, in the windows, you see this like ghostly figure, and you know, so that was really like, oh, this is crazy, because they knew I was interested in it. They, you know, I was always talking about crazy stuff when I was a kid. I was a lunatic, but so they presented it to me. They showed me, isn't this cool? I'm like, oh, that's so cool. But my first experience, basically, I really, really, really always questioned myself about it. You know, at first I thought this was definite, but I also have over time come to understand the mind a little bit better. You know, I work with psychologists and therapists, and you know I even studied DSM-5 myself and other books that involve psychology, so I understand how the mind can play tricks on us sometimes in the heat of the moment. And you know, I would say one of the experiences that I always question still to this day was, unfortunately, I'm going to tell a story about me going into a place I shouldn't go into, but of course, kids, you should not do that. You should get permission. I did not know any better. I don't do that stuff anymore. It is wrong, and you can get in serious trouble. So there is a place in Rhode Island called, or there was a place in Rhode Island called the Ladd School. And the Ladd School was this place where they did a lot of experiments. It was a course of psych ward, and they did a lot of experiments on people, and got in a lot of trouble later on in life about the things they were doing to patients, and eventually shut down because of this, and could not survive off the bad publicity. And that's basically the history, I would say, because I don't want to butcher the history of this place.
Sure.
What they did there was cruel things. So, of course, you know, as a young person, you know, interested in this as a hobby, I'm probably 14 years old, you know, and I have my Polaroid camera, you know, you have to send out the Fuji film or whatever it was. You had to send out to get it sent back to you. And I had my flashlight. I had my tape recorder, which I still love analog and tape recorders. I had all the bare bone stuff because this was before all this cool stuff started coming out that, you know, people spend thousands of dollars on now. So I'd go to this place, the graveyard's local to my house. But this one place I went to, the lad school, like I was saying, it was just so spooky. It was starting to be run down. It had been abandoned for quite a bit now. And, you know, some of the wheelchairs were still there. It was basically, you know, they just left everything without gutting it in, like a lot of these historic places are that are just left behind. And, of course, you know, I'm asking questions and I just walking around in the hallways. And, you know, I really don't talk about the story because I don't, the conditions back then were terrible. But it really was something that really kind of like sparked my interest even more, but something came rolling across the floor. I went in that room, and when I went to that room, whatever rolled wasn't there anymore. So I don't know if I was scaring myself or wanting something to happen, but I remember clearly seeing something roll. And of course, I had nobody with me, even that young. Like, my friends were too scared to go in the building, so I'm in the building by myself. I run out because I'm so scared. I run out like, oh, my God, I've seen this. And I get, everybody's like, no, you didn't. I'm like, yeah, I did, man. So, but, I like I said, that experience, I don't know if it was based off me wanting something to occur, but I was scared, and I experienced something that at that time I thought was a ghost, and it possibly could have been some sort of phenomenon that happened. But, you know, that was my first experience with something like, oh crap moment, like this is a possibility that something exists and it's trying to get my attention or scare me. But, you know, like I said, you know, the logical aspect, the analytical me now, much older, I question it. And I think that's appropriate to question it.
Sure. Well, I'm sure you had the experience, and it's hard to know exactly what it was. Certainly, that would keep your attention and keep your interest in the area, wanting to dig more because something happened, whether it was simply a squirrel that kicked something across the room or it was something paranormal, who knows? But whatever.
Yeah, it was a personal experience.
Exactly. And that's what kept you your interest there. So as you did begin to dig deeper as an investigator, what was the goal initially? Were you just going out there and trying to find interesting locations that allegedly had ghosts, or were you offering up in a group type setting folks who had something going on in their house and you were going to go and take a look?
Well, I started off as a hobbyist, as stated earlier, because I started investigating the paranormal in some form or fashion, even though probably not correctly, was around 14, 15 years old. So I was too young to be in a group at that time.
Sure.
And back then, of course, 20, how long ago was that now? Like, got almost 20 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
15 years ago, you know, there wasn't as many groups as there were now in Rhode Island. Rhode Island's small. There's a lot of groups now after the ghost hunter boom and the entertainment boom of the paranormal industry in the large capacity that it had happened.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't a lot of groups back then, and a lot of groups weren't willing to take a 14, 15-year-old on, as more they would probably be willing to do so now, because I help with the paranormal teen camp that, you know, has kids come out at these historic locations, and they do safe investigations and explore the possibilities of the unknown, but they didn't have that back then.
Sure.
So it started off as a hobbyist and going to these locations like cemeteries and graveyards and these abandoned locations that, you know, logically now I know I shouldn't have been in, but I basically did this stuff with friends. And also in that inclusion, there was some serious research too, as well as I still was confused about religion and God at that point in time. You know, my structure of faith didn't really come to me until I was 19, 20 years old, and I'm 30 now. So it really took a long time. So at that point, it was a mixture of things, fun and slash hobby, but also serious research. If I could really come across something that scared the crap out of me this immensely. I've seen an apparition, either in a personal experience or in a group setting, we all saw something happen. Then there could be some more a step forward to understanding that this does exist. And maybe if I saw it, that if spirits exist, back to the same equation, if spirits exist, and maybe possibilities of God does exist in some form in some format. So that's really what is a mixture of things. But I got to investigate a lot of places that would never have been able to be investigated by investigators. Some of these places are no longer open. Like, when I mean not open, they've been crumbled to the ground. So, you know, I was able to check out a lot of cool places, but I was also able to check out a lot of legendary things, such as Mercy Brown and Rhode Island, which is based off this person believing to be a vampire, but they really, you know, eventually they found out she really had tuberculosis. things like that. So I investigated those kind of locations, and it was very eye-opening. You know, I had experiences that would be called personal. Some of these things, I definitely doubt nowadays after coming into much more of an understanding what we could possibly be dealing with.
Sure. As you begin to dig deeper, and as you got older, obviously there's a difference between someone who is doing this as a hobby or doing this as an investigator, even, and then someone who is a demonologist. I know you call yourself a demonologist today. Take me on that road. What was the transition? How did you go from being an investigator as you got older into the world of demonology?
So that is another journey in itself, you know. So, you know, like I said, I was 19 years old basically when I really truly believed in a higher power, you know, where it was cemented. And that was when I was in the Army. I was in the Army for a short stint. I was medically discharged. But I would go to church, you know, funny story, I would go to church every Sunday to keep away from cleaning the barracks and basic training. And I would go to all different churches so I wouldn't have to clean. And because, you know, all the people that did not go to church had to clean the barracks tooth and nail. So if you were smart, you escaped for a little bit. So, you know, I was involved in the paranormal in some form or fashion as a hobbyist and researcher before I went in the military. But when I was in the military, I went to Church of Christ, and I was a Church of Christ ordained minister for quite a while. After all this, it really started me down a pathway, but it was a mixture of things. You know, basically I went to this, service on Sunday at the Church of Christ. And, you know, of course I'm just sitting there trying to get this quick snooze before drill sergeant sees me and starts yelling at me. But something came across me where, you know, the pastor at that time was asking, if you would like to be baptized. And I was baptized as a child as a Roman Catholic, but I had went to many different things because, you know, my grandparents who took care of me were Lutheran. And, you know, of course I was what you would call agnostic or atheist at some point in time in my life, or Darwinist in some form or fashion. But, you know, they said, who would like to be baptized today? And something came over me. I don't know what it was, but I raised my hand. I was like, I'll do this. And from that day on, it was just different. You know, I looked at God differently, in a weird way. And, you know, I started researching a little bit more heavily into theology and religion, more so than I did in an anti-suit of disproving it. You know, now it was to prove, my faith was right and correct. And why did I raise my hand? And so within this, and I started going through some ministry courses to the Church of Christ, and eventually became an ordained minister, aka a deliverance minister. That's what basically my ministry was for the Church of Christ. But within the course's format, before doing ministry work, I did eventually have my own group, and I ran it as a co-founder. Started doing residential cases and trying to solve what was going on in the person's house, and maybe trying to ease them, felt something to me that was necessary, than more than just going out to these places and having a good time. Or in reality, in some of these places, of the air infiltration and the bad conditions I was in, you know, it really led me to more understand that, you know, I kind of understand in my heart what I had faith in. And, you know, I don't know what this is. I will never be nigh enough to say that I know what a ghost is. But so I started doing the residential cases because, you know, there was people out there that did not know what they're dealing with, some scared. And within that process, I met a man through another co-founder of my group, a man named Carl Johnson. For people that don't know who Carl Johnson is, he has been in the field for 46 years. He is also a demonologist, as his brother is. Keith Johnson is also a demonologist. But the thing about Keith and Carl is they were the first investigators in the Conjuring House back in the 1970s, and brought the Warrens in and started that whole Conjuring House, basically, phenomenon that has occurred over the past quite a few years.
Sure.
And the Warrens' story. So I was able to meet Carl Johnson, who was on Ghost Hunters, which I absolutely adored and loved, and had met some of the people. And I was introduced to Carl, and I was very smart with technology. You know, in high school, I went to school for Cisco networking. You know, I used to work on computers. I loved setting up cameras. I loved working with screwdrivers. You know, I work in construction jobs as my secular job. I like tinkering. So I was offered a position within Beyond the Veil Paranormal, which Carl Johnson's group, who I really looked up to, and knew his story, knew his brother's story. And they worked with the Warrens, who I, of course, looked up to. And I was offered to be the tech manager of their group. So I took that, left my group, and of course my group was not happy, but I thought it was something that I needed to do, work with a demonologist, understand more so personal cases when it came to people. And that's really what led me down the demonology route. You know, I always looked into good and evil through literature, you know, the many concepts of it. But to work with a demonologist who I respected, who I looked up to, who was on Ghost Hunters, so, which crazy was the, you know, work alongside Carl. But that really was the starting point. And of course, I later became ordained with the Church of Christ. And, you know, even though Carl and I did eventually part ways, and we are working together again as dual demonology, a lecture / team dynamic. But we went our separate ways, and I started learning under different other people, working with other people, becoming friends with other demonologists who are respected by the many different churches or within this field, and learning from them. And eventually led me down to being a part of the Catholic Church and going through their seminary, and then being elevated to the office of diaconate, which is, of course, being a deacon. So, you know, but a lot of that all was because of knowledge and finding strength within my faith. And, you know, the demonology thing became important because it was something I was really fascinated in, because one of my all-time favorite books was King James Demonology or Daemonology, which inspired William Shakespeare to write Macbeth. So to me, that was fascinating. To me, to be able to work with Carl is really what kind of started it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny now that we are together again, working together in our lecture series, And it's an honor to work with him, and it was an honor to work with him back then. It really started a pathway that, you know, sometimes I regret because of the things that I've come across and the people's stories I've seen. But in a way, it has made my faith stronger, you know, and that's just something that I always look grateful for.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with James Anito. In part two, we will ask James, what did James learn personally from demonologist Carl Johnson? What was one of the most challenging demonic cases that James encountered? When James works with psychologists and therapists on cases to help people, how does the mental health field view his work? And many people criticize the number of individuals using the title of demonologist today. Does James feel this is overused, or is the path to being a demonologist today clearer than it ever has been in the past? We'll talk about all this and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a supporter of our program. We call them Grave Keepers. You do that by going to patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to our website, thegravetalks.com, and click Become a Grave Keeper. $5 a month will get you access to all of our conversations, part one and part two, more than 100 interviews and deep in-depth conversations just waiting for you to binge away on, and advanced episodes of the program. You get those months before they're released to the public. It's all there at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Be sure to check out James's website, James Anito, that's JamesAnnito.com. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.